All right, here we go. I think we figured our lines out here. From Pro Football Talk, it is our good friend Mike Florio. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys?
Good, good. I had a button on my side that wasn't flipped, so I'll take
it's Dave's fault.
I'll take the L for that one, Mike. But I will not go off and say that my board op and my boss and everybody else at CBS does not believe in me, so I got to believe in myself, which is what Ryan Fitzpatrick did just a couple days ago after a Jets win. Now he's back because Geno Smith is out with the ACL. Is this going to be awkward, or is it just the business of football?
Isn't it great that a guy can play poorly enough to get benched and then have a chip on his shoulder?
Yeah.
Based upon the fact that he got benched because he was bad enough to be benched. And my position is, whatever it takes to motivate a football player or anyone else, whatever, wherever the motivation comes from, that's fine with me. The motivation is there. And now we'll see what Ryan Fitzpatrick can do now that he's the starter again. He doesn't have to worry about Geno Smith anymore as long as Ryan Fitzpatrick remains with the Jets, and who knows how much longer that will be. But Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg, if the Jets at some point are, as a practical matter, done. And they're really not, as a practical matter, done yet. They could get hot. They could win some games. They're a couple of wins away if they could manage them. And their schedule is going to soften up from being at least relevant. So Fitzpatrick's the guy until they're essentially done. And he has another chance now. And if he does have greater motivation, chip on his shoulder, whatever the case, whatever it takes to play better. And that's essentially what Todd Bowles said yesterday. Hey, if he's mad, if he plays better mad and he's mad, then that's great. Let's go out and play better.
Mike, Arian Foster announces his retirement in the middle of the season, which is pretty unprecedented at this point. But when you think of his career and what he's done, are you going to remember his stats? Or are you going to remember his injury-riddled years and where he never really became the player he was supposed to be?
I think you remember both. I mean, for a while, he burned very brightly. He didn't enjoy much team success. He's part of this Texans organization that right now is good enough to get to the playoffs and good enough to get beaten early in the playoffs. And I think that's where they are this year with Brock Osweiler. They're good enough to win the division and good enough to either lose at home in the wild card round or go on the road and get destroyed by the Broncos or the Patriots. So Foster was great. At one point, he was in the conversation as one of the best running backs in the NFL, and now it's just over. And I admire him for recognizing that it's over when it's over. And usually what happens is football players are like Bruce Willis at the end of The Sixth Sense, spoiler alert, when the ring hits the ground and rolls away. They're the last ones to know that they've been dead all along. In this case, Arian Foster was the first one to realize and admit that it's over. And I've seen some characterize this as the latest example of a football player walking away with gas in the tank. No, he walked away the moment he recognized that the tank was empty, before anyone else had to tell him the tank is empty. And it's the perfect landing of the plane. And it seemed like a surprise, but when you consider he's not going to be the workhorse, Jay Ajayi has had two great games, and the injuries are still there for Arian Foster. It's just over. And I admire him for recognizing it, but it's not part of this narrative/hot take that guys are fleeing the sport while they still have, you know, while they still have games left. He was exactly at the right point to walk away.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us on The Drive. Mike, for my money, the AFC West is the toughest division in football. You got three teams with two losses, but I'm looking at the Chargers, man. Ever since Joey Bosa's come back, he's been lighting it up. They've been on a hot streak, and now they've got an elite quarterback and a top-end edge pass rusher. Are we looking past the Chargers, and do they have a chance to make a bit of a push here and some noise in that division?
Well, you know, the schedule gets a lot easier after they go to Denver this week. It's going to be very difficult to beat the Broncos there and complete the sweep. And I don't like it when teams play each other twice in a three-game stretch. It will be Denver at Atlanta and at Denver for the Chargers. But after that, they have Tennessee and Miami coming to San Diego. They could win both of those games, although the Dolphins are suddenly a lot better. And after the bye, they've got winnable games. They're not going to be easy. They have to go to Houston. It's not going to be an easy win. They've got to go to Carolina. That's not going to be easy if the Panthers start to figure things out. But they have games on the schedule that they should be able to win, and they could vie for a wild card berth. And, you know, that's one of the problems with the current structure of the NFL. They have eight divisions with four teams each, and you could be in a division with the four best teams in football. And by definition, by structure, only three of them have a chance to make it to the postseason. And, you know, meanwhile, you've got the AFC South, where somebody's got to get a playoff berth and a home playoff game. And I don't like that, especially in a year like this, where there is one division in the conference that seems to have four really good teams. But, you know, they dug a hole early. The question is, can they dig out of it at a time when their margin for error is narrower than it would have been if they hadn't blown all those fourth quarter leads? And they only have themselves to blame for that.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us. Mike, what an interesting Sunday night game between the Cardinals and the Seahawks.
Really? Are you serious?
Thank you, Mike.
One way or the other, it was interesting.
No, it was interesting. And here's the thing. If I was at home and not at the NBC studios working the game and getting ready for different things we do and you know, having to pay attention to the game, if I was just watching at home, I would have checked out early. I probably would have watched The Walking Dead or the football game. Same difference. And I would have come back at, like, you know, 11:15 Eastern time to see where it stood, because I would have been confident that this thing is just going to continue to be punt, 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 punt. And if anything big happens, I'll see the highlights. And, you know, that's the problem the NFL currently has. Last week, Roger Goodell said, we're not losing viewers. We just have viewers who aren't watching as much. And when the games aren't exciting, and I know that there's going to be a crowd out there that says, oh, defense is exciting. Well, most people do not agree with that. And the NFL decided back in the 70s to change the rules to increase the offensive output to lead to more exciting plays, more points scored. And that helped give rise to fantasy football. And now that fantasy football is such an important part of the game, does anybody really want to see a 3-3 game at the end of regulation who plays fantasy football? They want 30-30 like the Chargers-Falcons game at the end of regulation. Now, the challenge will be, if you change the rules in any way to try to inject more offense into the game, that 30-30 Falcons-Chargers game could end up being 60-60, and then you have arena football. I don't know what they need to do. They need to make the games more exciting. I don't know whether it's and I hesitate to even say this because I think it could quickly be crafted into a hot take, but take away the ability to chuck the receiver within 5 yards. Give everybody a free release off the line of scrimmage. You'll see more offense if that happens. The question is, how much more offense are you going to see? And I don't know that I trust the people who brought us the new touchback rule as a way to reduce kickoff returns. You know, so they try to change something. The next thing you know, the games are going to be 3-3 as a norm and not as a, you know, once every couple of week aberration. And that's, you can't have those aberration games in primetime. And the question is, how much of it really is an aberration? There was a Panthers-Buccaneers game that was 6-0 at halftime a couple of weeks ago. They just need more scoring. They need more excitement. They need to come up with a way to get there.
And that's kind of where I was going, because of the boring aspect. Nobody likes ties and the whole kissing your sister thing. Is there any conversation, any movement at all with the competition committee or whoever's relevant to this of getting the NFL to something similar to what college football does in their overtimes?
Well, that's never really come up, and I think part of it is a quiet arrogance on the part of the NFL that they are not going to copy approaches that other lower levels of football do. Just one of the topics a couple of weeks ago, just last week, making pass interference calls reviewable. Well, the Canadian Football League already does that. Does the NFL want to mimic something the CFL, which is beneath the NFL, has done? That doesn't mean that the NFL never will consider or embrace things that other levels of the sport do. The NFL, after all, adopted the two-point conversion back in 1994, which is something that college football had before that. But there is, I think, that inherent resistance to allowing innovations to trickle up. The NFL's attitude is, we make the innovations and they trickle down. So, I don't like ties either. And it's rare that they happen. It's like once every 2 years. And you know, man, I mean, 15 extra minutes of football, especially when you play on Sunday night. What if one of those teams was playing Thursday? You know, maybe there's a more efficient way to resolve these games that doesn't involve 15 more minutes of football.
Mike, do you think there's any truth to the idea that the NFL would balk at a college-type overtime system because of the implications it would have on gambling?
No, because you mean like over-unders?
Could be over under specifically, and then you've got the stat element to it. I don't think they want the crazy stats and the crazy numbers, but I mean, I see the NFL is so intertwined with gambling. I just heard that idea and wondering if you thought there was any truth to it.
I don't think that. I think an aversion to allowing a skewing of the stats would be more like, especially, you know, touchdowns. You get some ridiculous outcomes with some of these college games, but I think that the NFL adopted its overtime procedures, and it was a big deal when they were changed back in 2010 to allow for the team that kicked off to match a field goal, if a field goal is what the receiving team scores on its first drive. I just think that's so ingrained now that they're not going to change it.
I'm curious, Mike, obviously with the NBA or the NFL trade deadline coming up November 1st, we're already hearing the trade rumors and the talks. Torrey Smith is one of the names for the 49ers. You've also got Joe Staley. My question is, when it comes to the 49ers, do they just need to clean house and get rid of anybody that has value at this point in the season after a 1-6 start?
Well, here's the challenge, and this is one of the reasons why the NFL has a trade deadline. They don't want teams to completely give up, and they also don't want contenders to be able to go out and cherry-pick players late in the year. And if you do fold the tents, what message does that send to your fan base? And I don't know that it matters at this point. Because
1-6 start, that's the message.
Those traffic problems that were keeping people out of the stands on the Thursday night game against the Cardinals, apparently they were still present on the Sunday game against the Buccaneers. I think those traffic problems are going to be there all year long now. And it's a fine balance. What message are you sending to your fan base? And maybe you need to start severing ties with some of the players that you can get value for, and you take the position we're building for the future. And, you know, why pay a bunch of money to guys who aren't part of that future here? So I can understand trying to do it. Then the challenge becomes, what kind of a deal can you get? And are you willing to take the best offer that's available, even if you think that you should be getting more for Joe Staley or Torrey Smith or anybody else who possibly would be available?
Well, Mike, that's why I think this is an intriguing question, because I'm sitting right next to two 49ers fans that have been whining and crying for a while that they're pissed if they go on and win any more games, because they really want the season to be a complete dumpster fire because they're looking towards the draft.
Yep.
And, you know, I say this every year, and I've argued from time to time that there should be a draft lottery, because there is a real temptation to tank. And, we always hear it from the perspective of coaches and players. Oh, there's no way we would ever tank. Well, right. But the owners who decide to go with Geno Smith, for example, or decide to go with Christian Ponder if it comes to that. You know, the owners can set the policy of the football operation by saying, I want to see what the second string cornerback can do. I want to see what the backup left tackle can do. I want to see what the backup running back can do. And you have a de facto tank by virtue of the people that ownership and the front office decide to put on the field. And a couple of years ago, and this never got the attention it deserved, the Buccaneers clearly tanked in the second half, week 17 against the Saints. They took out a bunch of their starters. They were leading the game. The Saints came back and won, and it allowed the Buccaneers to get in position to draft Jameis Winston. Of course, there's a temptation to tank. And if I know my favorite team isn't going to make it to the playoffs, then why not tank? Who cares whether it's 6-10, 5-11, 4-12, 3-13? Who cares? As long as you're not the 2008 Detroit Lions, as long as you have one win, who cares? Because what do we see every year? Oh, man, if we were just a couple of spots higher, we could have gotten that guy. Well, maybe you can be a couple of spots higher if you do what you need to do now by way of losing games.
Well, and the problem here is this is one of the two 49er fans that's been crying next to Katie all year long, is that you worry that if the Niners do get, and let's say the one picks off the table with the Browns, they get the two or the three, that Trent Baalke's going to go out and grab the most talented guy that has a former torn ACL.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the same thing. That's right. Let's find somebody who's got a torn ACL, and that'll be the pick.
So then here's the thing.
And you assume it's going to be Trent Baalke.
Of course. And that's where I'm going here. Now, the banners are coming back to Levi Stadium this weekend. There's new, you know, people are talking about that. They'll be flying the I Hate Jed York or Fire Trent Baalke banners, and we know Jed doesn't like that. Is Jed's head buried so far up his rear end that at this point there's any doubt that he's going to remove Trent Baalke at some point between now and game one next year?
Well, when Jed York was talking to the media after they had the mutual parting with Jim Harbaugh, who did Jed say to hold accountable? if they don't compete for championships. That's Trent Baalke?
Yeah.
Or Jed York?
Yeah.
How do you hold Jed York accountable?
Right.
What do you do? And, you know, you hold him accountable by having traffic problems on game day, by not showing up, by not buying jerseys, by not caring about the team. And see, ultimately, that's the challenge every NFL team faces. It's an entertainment business, and you have to convince fans to spend money, time, and emotion. It's if you make your fan base apathetic, you're done. And the 49ers fan base is getting close to apathetic. Have we seen a team that has gone from being consistent contender to consistent bottom of the stack more quickly than the 49ers? Mm-hmm. And when ESPN ranks, and I look, these are stupid subjective rankings, but still, ESPN ranks all 122 American Major League sports franchises, and the 49ers come in at 122. That is a stinging indictment. And
with a brand new stadium, Mike.
And it's just amazing to think that not long ago, Jed York was viewed as a rising star, a guy, you know, the next Eddie DeBartolo, and here come the 49ers, and the dynasty is back, and all because they couldn't deal with Jim Harbaugh. I don't know. I still don't know what the truth is as it relates to Jim Harbaugh, but somebody had the bright idea that they should get rid of Harbaugh and put in Jim Tom Sula, and that was a mistake. And now this Chip Kelly thing is not working out, and they look horrible. As long as they have 7 months to get ready for a game, they look great. If they had a seven-month bye between games, they would be unbeatable. It's when they have 7 days instead of 7 months that it's a problem. And it's you know, the Buccaneers aren't a horrible team, but that's a game that the 49ers, if they had any hope, if they were any good, that's a game that they should win. And they got beat by double digits. I mean, they're in a hole now that's going to be very difficult for them to dig out of. And at what point do you press the reset button on the entire football operation? And then the question becomes, at what point do you press the reset button on the entire franchise?
Yep.
Mike, I know where my apathy comes from as a 49ers supporter, but do you feel like a lot of this apathy broadly has to do with the fact that, you know, 49ers fans have a reputation as front runners. They haven't been winning recently, or do you think a lot of them do trace it back to, dude, why'd you fire Jim Harbaugh?
I think Harbaugh is part of the frustration. That look, and who knows whether Harbaugh really wanted to stay. You know, there were so many different stories and theories, and he wanted to be paid like a Super Bowl winning coach, and he hadn't won a Super Bowl. Well, you know what? Maybe coaches need to make more money than they currently get. Maybe there should be more coaches who are good who should be paid like Super Bowl winning coaches, even if they haven't, because there's no salary cap. And if you look at the growth rate for coaches over the last 20 or 30 years, it hasn't expanded nearly the way that it should. And the coach has a huge impact as the talent gaps get closer and closer, a huge impact coaches have on winning and losing. So, you know, I know there was friction between Harbaugh and Baalke, and there was pretty much friction between Harbaugh and everyone. But you know what? When Bill Walsh was there, there was plenty of friction. They didn't always get along. It's a stressful business. You need to find a way to work with people. John Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh have the same DNA. And I've heard that John Harbaugh is worse at times than Jim Harbaugh. He just has a better ability to compose himself, except when somebody kicks the plug out of the wall during the Super Bowl. and they've been able to coexist with John Harbaugh in Baltimore, now in part because they've been consistent contenders, but so were the 49ers, and they couldn't live with Jim Harbaugh. So I don't know where this thing stands right now. If I was a 49ers fan, though, I would have even greater despair than if I was a Browns fan, because at least with the Browns, there's a sense that they're laying the foundation for something good. With the 49ers, I don't sense that there's any plan, that there's any positivity, that there's anything to be hopeful about. You know, you can at least say in most cities, wait till next year. With the 49ers, it's like, oh God, we have to do this again next year.
In addition to the great Pro Football Talk, where can people hear, see, and read Mike Florio?
Well, if you're fighting insomnia on the West Coast, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio, the final 2 hours of simulcast on NBCSN. The entire show does re-air, although I don't want to draw any listeners away. We do have Levante David in 12 minutes on the re-air, but you can hear it on the podcast too. And we do it every weekday, and it's nice to get up early and pass out around 2 p.m. Eastern time and have the second shift after that.
We just got about 20 seconds, Mike, but I got to ask you, Cubs or Indians?
Pirates. and you know what? I saw this comment online.
Uh-huh. Don't read the comments, Mike.
But no. Not a comment on at PFT. Somebody pointing out, and I think it was Deadspin.
Yeah.
The idea that all these people are going to be pulling for the Cubs because they're a sentimental favorite. Do you think any Cubs fans are going to pull for your team because they become sentimental favorites?
No. We will see you. We will talk to you next week. Right. Always a blast, Mike. Thank you.
See you guys.
All right. That is Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. He has a great point, too, about the Cubs fans.